And welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Eudalie Wickham Ashby. And today, as we continue to examine issues, matters, and all that are affecting persons with disabilities and their families, I am extremely pleased to have in conversation with me today Sharika Bentham, a speech therapist. Welcome to the program, Sharika.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so Sharika, tell us a little about yourself, because I guess some people would say, but I never heard of her. I don't know who she is.
Yes, well, I am a speech and language therapist, which means that I work with children and adults with a range of any sort of communication difficulties. So any difficulty with speech, language, stuttering, voice, any of those, I assess and provide treatment, or what you say, intervention for. I also do things like parent coaching. I talk to parents about, you know, meeting early developmental milestones, which I think we can get into a little bit later. And I, you know, I support teachers, I support parents, I support allied professionals, anything that relates to communication.
Okay. And what would have prompted you to go into this career of speech and language therapy?
Well, I have always been interested in the area of special needs. From the time I was a teenager, I was doing volunteering for Special Olympics, working with children with special needs, doing reading programs, shadowing psychologists. I initially wanted to get into clinical psychology, but after shadowing a speech therapist and seeing the practical aspect of the field, I enjoy that a lot more, and I get to play more too. So that was it for me. Then I went to New Zealand. I did my master's in speech and language therapy and came back here to practice.
Okay, nice. What was the experience like in New Zealand?
Oh, that was an amazing experience. Learning about new cultures, I mean, it was a bit difficult being on the other side of the world and being in a time zone 17 hours ahead. But, you know, learning from new cultures and, you know, New Zealand has a lot of great research and a lot of great studies that came out when I was over there. And that was about 10 years ago, relating to language development and working with adults as well, so adult stroke rehabilitation, working with cleft palate. So I was glad to be at the forefront of that working, training under some of the best mentors.
Okay, lovely, lovely. And I believe that having that broad experience also helps to enhance your own, you know, service delivery and quality of service.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And that's the big thing that I always tell to persons who are now getting into the field as well. We live on an island, and that means that we're so shut off from access to a lot of resources and services, but it's always good to, you know, seek other networking opportunities, whether it be taking courses outside. I mean, before COVID, I would go to lots of seminars and conferences, conventions, networking with other professionals in the field via social media, Instagram, Twitter, and trying to keep, you know, continued learning is essential. Lifelong learning is key for further professional and personal growth.
Fantastic. So what would you say are some of the most common causes of speech and language impairments?
What I see the most, I would say right now, I see mostly pediatric clients, so children. And what I would say I would see the most is speech and language, what we would call speech and language delays, or some would call it global developmental delays. So children who are late talkers, because you have certain milestones that you should reach. So by a certain age, parents realize, okay, this child has turned 2, this child is, you know, 3, he's not talking, he's not using sentences, he's not giving conversation as I would like. So the pediatrician would refer them to a speech and language therapist. The teacher might say something, the school teacher might, the preschool teacher, sorry, might say something, or the parent, like mommy always knows when there's something a little bit off with a child's development. So the most I will see is what we would have the speech and language delay. Following that, you would see, and going back to that, we wouldn't, don't want to say that there's a primary cause. Some children develop a little bit later than others. Sometimes they may be some cognitive deficit, sometimes they maybe some things like autism, right? That's a big buzzword coming out, and the majority of my caseload right now is on the autistic spectrum. Most of the kids I see are on the spectrum or suspected on the spectrum. So that will cause deficits in speech, you know, speech and communication, social interaction as well. Another thing that we see quite commonly is speech sound disorder. So I know Bajans like to say that the child has a heavy tongue and they're not pronouncing certain things. Clearly, we call those speech sound disorders, right? When the child isn't clearly understood because they're not able to understand every single word that they say. So some of the sounds sound off. So they might be saying tar for car or do for shoe or I dot it for I got it, right? Mm-hmm. So those are some of the common ones.
Or would you say that speech and language impairments are also associated with hearing loss?
Sometimes that can be the case because you need to be able to hear to be able to speak clearly and to be able to articulate or pronounce certain words clearly. What we have seen and what the research has shown is that with some children with speech sound disorder, they may have had some ear infections or which have caused a mild hearing loss. There's a very, very close link. This is not always the case, but a lot of the time we will send a child for a hearing test just to rule out any sort of hearing impairment, any sort of ear infection, or anything that's causing a mild hearing loss, especially around those critical ages for developing. Right, so that 1 to 3 year old age range, that's very important.
And would you tell us then about some of the myths that people may have around speech and language impairment that you will have to demystify for the parents and guardians or other family members?
Definitely. I think the biggest one in our Caribbean communities is that, you know, you always get the grandparents that are saying, he'll talk when he's ready. Your uncle, aunt, dad, whoever didn't speak till he was 4 and look, he's fine. There's been that myth of the wait and see approach, which has pervaded our society for so many years. And it's really hard to break that because, and I'm a strong advocate of breaking that because my biggest rule is early intervention is key. The children who have early intervention, and that will be, I usually say before 5, that birth to 5 age group, they are more likely, and we have so many studies showing this, they're more likely to show that improvement and show that progress and have, you know, those gains in as they move to the educational setting. That they're more likely to show that good progress to, you know, interact within their everyday activities so that, you know, that's good improvement. So I don't want to say to be typically developing, but to catch up with their peers.
Right.
Language delays are so closely related to literacy delays. They're so, you know, they go hand in hand. So when a child, you're thinking about a child at 2, and I'm thinking about the child when he's 5, when he's about to start school, when he's 8, you know, when he's getting further on school, and then, you know, in Barbados and the Caribbean, we have that common entrance age, and we don't want them to come at 10 saying, oh my goodness, you know, he's struggling and not doing well for common entrance, where we didn't hit all the key foundation areas that, you know, could have been corrected at 2 and 3, or could have been supported from such an early age. So early intervention is key. So I want to debunk that myth. There's no wait-and-see approach. if you see something, speak to a professional. There's so many outlets online where you can look at the developmental milestones. Just type developmental milestones in Google, and it will show you all the targets that a child should be reaching by, say, 1 year old, by 2 years old, by 3 years old, and you can see if your child's matching up with these targets. Yes, every child develops differently, but the general patterns that these milestones follow that you can go off of when you're looking at, you know, how your child is developing.
No, Jerika, you just highlighted a concern that I have as you spoke about, you know, this myth of grandparents and some parents as well not seeing the urgency to have speech therapy or language therapy for their child who may have delayed speech. But on the other side of that is you as the parent or guardian may be trying to get your child into nursery or even primary school, and the officials are saying no, they will not take the child because of delayed speech, delayed communication skills. How can we address this?
Oh, this is a tough matter to address, because that's more of a case of education at the governmental level and at the educational level. Because the reality is there are some preschools, there are some schools where the teachers are not trained enough, they're not equipped enough to be able to support a child with communication difficulties. A lot of the times, too, these communication challenges go hand in hand with behavioral challenges as well, because a lot of children who aren't communicating, they use their behaviors to communicate. So the first thing a preschool teacher or a teacher may say is, I can't deal with this child, right? So we need to attack it from more of an educational perspective, where we, you know, train teachers more, where we provide more support to teachers on how to set up their classrooms for children, incorporating and including children who have what we would say, what we would call special needs, right? So it's needing to be more of a training and education level.
Okay. Now, we're in the COVID-19 situation where we have to wear masks, we have to sanitize our hands, our shoes, our clothing, and just keep that physical distance. How have you been coping with this new approach within your speech therapy business?
Yeah, I think we have managed it really well. I just want to say that my team is excellent. So we have managed to just adapt and change our policies, change our protocols, and that has done well for the practice. Even from a business side, it's done really, really well for the speech and my speech therapy practice. When we first were, you know, there were rumors of a lockdown. This was earlier in March. I went on, I told my team, it's time to do some training. So we went and we decided to do, we looked for as much training on offering mobile therapy solutions, offering teletherapy, which was a huge new field for us, not a new field in general, but it was pretty much new to us because we were so used to the face-to-face services. So we spent pretty much weeks studying everything on telepractice, teletherapy, doing trial runs. I brought in all my I enlisted all my friends, their kids, so that we could have that practice, so that we could be up and running. So as soon as we were in lockdown, my business was saying, you know what, we're online, start to come into our clinic, we're adding to our virtual clinic from now. So we were able to go through the whole lockdown period offering services, offering support to our families. With the ones who were experiencing financial difficulty, we were able to still offer, you know, group